Do you like the great taste of boot leather?
No.
Well, I know two famous stars who do.
Oh, God. Who?
Well, over this past week, a lot's been going on, but specifically, Mark Ruffalo and John Cena, of all people, got in a little trouble.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, now you're going to hear about it again.
Okay.
Mark Ruffalo, activist? Activist automatically tells you, you know, what political side they're on, right? There are no right-wing activists.
No.
So liberal's also a dirty word, but let's just say that he's a liberal activist.
Sure.
He works for charities, he cares about oppressed people,
mm-hmm.
and he tweeted about what's going on in the Gaza Strip and in Palestine right now.
Right.
And he called what the Israelis are doing a genocide. Now,
yeah.
I guess that's up for the UN to decide. Tell you right now, I won't be tweeting that I disagree with him.
Uh-huh.
But there's probably been smaller genocides than what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians recently.
Probably.
But who? Not according to Mickey Mouse, because almost immediately after, he had to tweet, "I'm so sorry. We're sorry. I apologize."
Yeah.
This is an inflammatory term. It's not necessary right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Then John Cena, mm-hmm. who is not some jar... Well, he is a jar-headed a lunk, but he's also a real smart guy, and he speaks Taiwanese. Excuse me. He speaks Chinese.
Okay. Difference.
Not cutting that out.
No, that's okay.
And he called Taiwan a country and not part of China.
Right.
Apparently in a promotional video, I'm assuming, for the new Fast and Furious movie.
Uh-huh.
And so he had to take to YouTube.
Right.
And in Mandarin, which he speaks, because he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He apologized to the people of China for calling Taiwan a country.
As you do, because you can't do that, because they're China.
Because
doesn't
Vin Diesel called
them
up and said,
country.
Hey. They're not fam. They are fam. Somebody's family. I don't know who the family is.
They belong to China.
So, boy, you can speak out, but you can't speak out enough, huh?
Not if you want to keep working.
Not if you
want to
keep being the Hulk.
Companies, yeah, right. Exactly.
I guess that's the same thing as not baking a cake for gay people or something.
Is it?
I don't know, because every single one of us knows which way the arc of history is going, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going towards justice. No matter how many cakes you refuse to bake, it's going there.
Yeah.
So there's a good side and a bad side here.
Yeah.
But there is a side with capital. And
there
that side,
is.
This is, if anybody still listens to this show, it is completely 100% like a socialist platform now. But there's a side with capital, and sometimes that capital decides to, it deigns to apply that pressure, that capital that it has to the right side. And sometimes it just wants to make as much more capital as it can.
Absolutely.
And that's where we're at right now.
That is where we're at.
Although I don't get the whole Israel-Palestine thing, because I don't, as far as I know, he's never been checked, Ruffalo, for anything he said before.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? Like, what, we're not trying to sell movies to Israel specifically, right?
I don't know. I don't know if
Eternals
has given Disney a lot of money or what. I don't know what the thing is.
Well, it's not whatever you said. I don't know what any of that was. I don't know why. I completely 100% understand that China is the biggest film market in the world.
Uh-huh.
So when you piss off, like, anybody cares. I'm sure there's people in China who are like, I feel like Taiwan's probably their own country at this point, right?
Or what about like Hong Kong?
It's only been 60 years.
Right.
No, Hong Kong, that's a done deal. That's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know about Hong Kong?
What do you mean I don't know about Hong Kong?
Why would you think? Hong Kong is not disputed.
Shouldn't they be their own? Like,
they were.
Yeah.
They had a lease with the British government
to run
Hong Kong. They would hand it over in 1997. That's been handed over. It's done and dusted.
Handed back
the
over
protests
to China.
In Hong Kong right now are over the control that they
I understand that.
Right. But it doesn't mean they're just used to less dystopianism than the rest of the country.
Okay.
I'm not saying they shouldn't get their way. I'm not saying that the entire dystopia should be eliminated. It absolutely should.
Mm-hmm.
But like legally, there's no. The UN recognizes Taiwan, it's a country. Uh-huh. Whatever China or John Cena says.
Right.
I can see Taiwan.
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's waving its hand in front of my face.
Right. No, I get it.
Well, how do you feel? Here's why I bring it all up. Because I'm a fire starter.
Uh-huh.
And here's also why I bring it all up. And this might be a bad reason to bring it all up. Because I'm not sure we're going to get anything out of this. But what do you think? What do you think about stars both revealing their personal views about hot button topics and being possibly censored or censured by their controlling organization?
I think that people should be able to express themselves however they feel, you know, necessary. I mean, I guess we have to pick and choose a little bit, but like, I think this is something that, you know, both of them probably feel fairly strongly about. And then like, why are we censoring them? Like, especially like, I mean, maybe John Cena was just like legitimately like thought that Taiwan was a country or recognized.
Well, I didn't watch the original video.
Yeah.
If it was promotional, like, you know, connected to the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
Did he even write the copy for it? You know what I'm saying?
Maybe not. Maybe it's not even his goof.
If he knows Mandarin and he's a world traveler, then he knows the situation. Do you think that he was trying to send a message and then was... Vin Diesel, you know, knocked on his door.
I mean, it's entirely possible that he was, and then he was like, oh, wait, I guess I can't get away with that.
Here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Because contrary to everybody's belief, people on the left are not unreasonable and not crazy. Sure, of course, some of them are.
Yeah,
some of everybody sucks.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is, was Gina Carano given an opportunity to retract her hateful comments about trans people?
Oh, I think she was fired. I think she was.
Okay.
I think so she absolutely was.
She was right or wrong for not taking the deal. And Mark Ruffalo was right or wrong for taking the deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
see the problem?
Are you asking me?
This is, well, I know you have no answer. And I know you won't even make it entertaining to tell me you have no answer. But this is why I started this with, we all know what the right answer is. And whether you're given a chance to say the right answer or lie and say the right answer or say the wrong answer or lie and say the wrong answer,
right.
We all know what the right answer is.
Yeah.
No matter who's the Hulk, no matter who Cara Dune is, we all know what's right and wrong.
We do. Yeah. I think we do. Yes.
And we're all going to have to get on board for that eventually.
I think so,
and
too.
Here's a cake that I made specifically to say that.
I don't know. The Israeli-Palestine thing is just...
Yeah, well, that's what the show's about today. We're going to dig
right into
that.
It's incredibly difficult, just in general.
Go ahead, hold forth.
Well, I'm just saying.
You take it.
I'm just saying, you know, I've heard a lot of people who feel like they can't say anything about it because they don't want to say anything against Israel because they don't want to sound anti-Semitic. And
No, we've completely locked it up so that you cannot criticize Israel and not be called anti-Semitic. It's the perfect defense.
It's just ridiculous because... Look, Israel is a country just like any other country, and they can make mistakes. And this is not a good move on their part. I'm just saying it. It's not. And I'm Jewish. I don't think it's anti.
Oh, here comes the card hits the table.
Well, I don't think it's anti-Semitic to say that. You shouldn't persecute another group of people or another country just over some land. Just because you feel like you can, just like you can shove your weight around. And
and you're pretty heavy.
No.
The weight that you're shoving around.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got a lot of...
A lot of that weight comes from U.S. dollars.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Billions
like,
a year.
U.S. is backing a lot of this, and I have a little bit of an issue with that, to say the least.
Anybody back the Palestinians?
Is anyone?
Yeah. Not so we can have like World War III centered on the Levant, but like,
or is it
Levant? I've only seen it in writing. I'm pretty sure it's that Levant sounds better, like Levant Cranston or something.
I have no idea.
We can have a proxy World War III, but so, you know, we can help them develop.
Who?
Make buildings that you can't knock down with a bulldozer, bulldozer.
Who hates Israel who has money? Who's
not
Palestine.
No, that's, see, we're not looking for that.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly what we're not looking for.
I don't know. Is there even a good answer to what even you're even proposing?
Well, here's the worst answer. Throwing up your hands and saying there is no answer. That's the worst one. And that's the kind of hot button political talk you can expect to hear on the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hanna. This just in.
And did you want to take it?
This just in, another hot button issue.
No, I'm getting one too. What if there's two newscasters, they're both like, oh, I'm getting one. No, is it in your ear? No, it's in my ear. Oh, what? Yeah.
We're going to Ron Burgundy this.
Speaking of Ron Burgundying things, we're talking about a very special movie today.
We are.
That I think if you watch Ron Burgundy, also known as Anchorman,
yes,
you will see some of the DNA of this film in that. Oh, now, of course, that's just a balls out wacky comedy and whammy and all that good stuff. But But the sort of newscaster, there's no sports, unfortunately.
No.
Newscaster film is 1976's Network, directed by Sidney Lumet, written by Paddy Chayefsky, starring a bunch of stars.
Yes.
There was probably news stories before that. When did Mary Tyler Moore start? Early 70s, right?
I think.
But this is like the definitive, looking at the business of news and the commercial interests behind it. And the way that we listen to and respect our newscasters, but, you know, what do they think about what's going on and the direction of it, commercialism, politicalism,
capitalism. Who's
big
behind
C.
the news? Yeah. What are they trying
Ned
to
Beatty
tell us?
Yelling at you. Yeah. ITT, IBM.
Yes.
Yeah. And GE. That's what we're talking about.
Very satirical film.
Thanks to you, your pick.
My pick.
For our co-videos segment.
Yes.
Why'd you pick it?
Well, it was on my list.
Why'd you do this to us?
I know. Well, it was on my list, and it just, you know, I was going through and, like, looking at, like, different trailers for other films I was thinking about possibly doing, and this just really stuck out to me because I think a lot of the things that the film talks about are really topical to now, even though the film came out in 1976.
Yeah.
And I also just think that it's a very pivotal film that I think a lot of satirical works since, you know, maybe reference or have gotten you know, I think some ideas from.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, and it just seemed like there are some really great performances in it, and I was not disappointed by that. So I just felt I gravitated towards it as a pick.
I think that it's a movie that has over time gained in importance and resonance.
Yeah.
But also has shifted as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the, like, late 90s. So Ebert loved it. Roger Ebert loved it when he was it came out. He was writing for the Tribune.
Sure.
Came out and he said, you know, yeah, it's good. And then later on, I think in the 90s, it was sort of being reevaluated. And he wrote, like, a blog poster about it. And he said, like, oh, if, you know, Paddy Chayefsky just really nails it. And it's almost like he predicted, like, you know, the WWE or something like that. Like, he was comparing it to sort of that. But this is the 90s when we fixed all our problems.
Oh,
he wasn't even thinking about
right.
the, like, corporate interests that control the news. And you've seen that YouTube video where, like, there's 176 different affiliates and they're all reading the same script, you know, because it comes from whoever owns all those affiliates.
Right.
So he was getting close. He was talking about the spectacle, you know, of Howard Beale's show.
Oh, sure.
Like Howard Beale cast it as a sort of fire and brimstone Vince McMahon or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Totally
right.
Leaving out the political aspect. Now that everybody, and I apologize to Black Twitter, is woke, we understand more the real interests behind what Beale and what the movie is trying to get to us.
Mm-hmm.
And Beale is insane. Is he speaking truth? I don't know, because he is clearly losing his mind.
I think there's a mental break.
So,
and he really, you know, as one of his
friends
says.
So as a source, he is extremely questionable, and yet he is running up against these things that are, like the Ned Beatty character only appears in like one scene, but he is really like the actual villain.
Uh-huh.
Unless you think television is a villain, as Max does.
Television or like you know, capitalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the movie, this is 1975. The movie doesn't even say capitalism, but it kind of means capitalism.
They don't say
it. Is the segment over? Did we just get through it all right here? Maybe we should save this for a little later.
Yeah, okay. That sounds good.
So that's what we're talking about in our feature segment. Of course, we'll do the news, and here's your opportunity to say whatever you want.
Oh, my opportunity
Baba Booey,
say...
Baba Booey.
Yeah, right.
How's your penis?
What?
Just keep going.
I'm watching Shadow and Bone on Netflix. Yeah, you're going to laugh at me. And I'm enjoying it. I've got like 2 episodes left. I think it's only 8 episodes, the first season. And yeah, it's YA. And I've heard a lot of mixed reviews from people, but I think as far as YA TV series go, that's like, you know, sci-fi-ish, I think it's pretty good in a lot of different ways. I mean, it could be better, but I don't know. I'm enjoying it so far. It's got an interesting cast of characters. The main character is not necessarily the most interesting one.
All right.
So, you know.
Katniss.
Yeah, well.
So as a YA joint, yeah. I think we were talking about YA off mic a little earlier, but mm-hmm. like as a YA thing, is it believable or does it at least give you enough to chew on? You know what I mean? And for the audience, one of my complaints about a lot of YA stuff is that because it's for younger readers, uh-huh. authors often just go, well, something happens, you know, like their plots don't make sense or their characters yeah. are shallow or the story doesn't really like have a good flow and connect. And then they get immediately turned around into movies, and the movie screenwriters don't always fix those problems. And so I was watching a video about like Mortal Engines, which is a ridiculous idea, but I'm down for like some ridiculousness.
Sure.
But apparently like the idea of cities becoming mobile and going around and devouring other cities, which is also sort of a, you know, parable about capitalism.
Yeah.
Works right. on paper, but when you have to try to explain it in a film, it just does not work at all. Mm-hmm. And Peter Jackson did nothing to really make that make more sense.
Yeah. I think it makes enough sense for the story that's being told. From what I understand, they actually combined 2 different series for
Shadow and Bone?
Well, no, Shadow and Bone and like some other series that's by the same author. That's something
set in the same world.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. Something of Crows or something like that.
Oh. Crows before Bros.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think like some of the more interesting characters there's basically there is this mystical world and there's
yeah, you don't have to explain it.
But there's this
Oh, you're going to explain it.
Okay. I don't know. I just lost my steam.
That's okay. You can get your smoke or your shadow.
Your
or
shadow in the world. And your bone.
Is it a metaphor for anything? Because it looks like a metaphor for like colonialism or something like that. Is it that or the frontier? There's this shadow and they're like, we got to go into the shadow.
Colonial, but like it just like power corrupts.
Sure.
Like ultimate power corrupts.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. That's what Lord Acton had in mind.
I mean, there's this basically like there's like this big darkness shadow.
Ultimate power corrupts.
Yeah. There's this huge shadow strip in between this country, and so now this country is divided and. It's like East and West Ravka, and like one of them wants to split off and become its own country.
Because they have all the brown people in their country?
They're not as well off.
Okay,
and
same. Yeah, so yeah. Global South. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, never mind. I think I figured the whole thing out. It reminds me kind of, I have nothing to share. I'm reading Player Piano. That's why I'm so into
Player
socialism.
Piano?
Yeah, Kurt Vonnegut's first book.
Oh, okay.
It
Is
reminds
there an
me...
actual Player Piano in it?
We'll get there.
Okay.
I'll probably talk about it on the show later.
Okay.
It reminds me of this video game that I started playing and then didn't finish playing called Greedfall, which is all about a fictional world that is similar to the kind of exploratory period of Earth, you mm-hmm. know, the Renaissance, or I guess that's not connected to exploring, but same years, 15th, 16th century. push that forward, 16th, 17th century. And you play a character who is like a lord of a minor house, and you go to this new continent that's been discovered. And so all these interests, these industrial interests in the mainland are trying to exploit the resources of the island. And then you find out that there are people who are already living on the island and they have some kind of connection to, and I'm not sure it goes full Fern Gully, but it seems like it's kind of going there. Anyway, that's a popular theme right now. I wonder why.
Probably because a lot of that stuff is coming up.
Because everybody feels oppressed.
Yes. Yeah.
And depressed.
Yes. Yeah.
And repressed. And Oprah, I said that one already. Let's talk about the news. There's so many stories. We just have to, do you want to just read some line items off here? So we were picking on Mark Ruffalo before, but I'm excited that he is joining Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie, Poor Things.
Oh.
Now, you're going to get sad. Okay. It's like the kombucha meme. You're going to be sad and then you're going to be, Emma Stone's in it. That's the sad part.
Okay.
And then Willem Dafoe's in it.
Oh, I love that Willem Dafoe is in it. Willem Dafoe and Mark Ruffalo. That could be interesting.
Now, we'll get to that in a sec. Let me finish a little summary here. Okay. I don't think we do know what it's about. So he was supposed to be working on like a detective noir movie, wasn't
he? That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah. But this is according to Variety, a Frankenstein-esque tale set in Victorian era. Now I'm sad because I ranted a couple weeks ago about stop setting things in the Victorian times. Who cares? It's described as a story of love, discovery, and scientific daring, focusing on a young woman named Belle Baxter, brought back to life by an eccentric but brilliant scientist.
Oh, shut up. So Emma Stone is going to be
Emma Stone is the Frankenstein.
Yeah.
It's a monster.
Yeah. She's going to be the creature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
I guess. Now let's
talk
about
an interesting twist.
Let's talk about our actors.
Yeah.
We've both talked before about Yorgos Lanthimos at length.
Yes.
And his style.
Yes.
And how a big disappointment of the favorite was Emma Stone in that she can do the style. And I think because it's a big movie and he needs her, he changed his style to let Emma Stone be in an Emma Stone movie. While everybody else was in a Yorgos Lanthimos movie, she's like, I've got to figure out this mystery. You know, she got to be Emma Stone. And she can't do the thing, right?
Yeah.
But like Olivia Colman can do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The hot brunette can do the thing.
Why can't I think of her name right now?
Sorry. even Nick Holt could kind of do the thing.
Yeah, sure.
So Willem Dafoe can do the thing because he can do anything.
He can do anything.
Can Mark Ruffalo do the thing?
Why not?
Because Mark Ruffalo is Willem Dafoe is a chameleon and he's a guy who can do anything. Mostly scary, kind of leathery things. Mark Ruffalo is an actor of personality. I'm not saying he doesn't have range, but he's like, you come to see this handsome guy. He's going to be kind of disarming. He's going to be a little befuddled, but in a kind of hot way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're coming to see.
Yeah.
Can he shut that off and have and flat effect like a Lanthimos film?
I think with Yorgos Lanthimos directing him, yes, I think that he can.
Ooh,
I think that
put it on the director.
I think he's perfectly capable.
I think if you can turn Colin Farrell into somebody who can be in a Yorgos Lanthimos movie, you can handle Mark Ruffalo.
That's what I think too.
Okay, good.
Like Colin Farrell, I don't think is somebody who's like necessarily a great actor, but I love him in Yorgos Lanthimos films.
yeah, he's great.
He's fantastic.
All right, we're both excited about that. That's good news.
Yeah.
Here's some other. Okay, news.
Okay.
FX is working on a limited series for Shogun. Did we talk about this? We didn't talk about this.
I don't know if we talked about this.
Yeah, it's going to have... We were talking about the real Shogun a couple weeks ago, and I just discovered that FX is working on a Shogun miniseries or limited series.
So based on the novels,
the James Clavell novel. Yes.
Okay.
Hopefully updated for modern sensibilities. And it will star Hiroyuki Sanada. He recently was seen as Scorpion in the Mortal Kombat film, and Cosmo Jarvis as Blackthorn.
I have no idea who that
sounds
is.
Like a comic book character, doesn't he?
He does. Okay. I mean, I like the guy who's Scorpion, despite the fact that I don't feel like Mortal Kombat was that great. interesting. Is Shogun, isn't it about like a white guy being a Shogun, or am I wrong about that?
He is not Shogun. It's about an English, it's actually very similar to the real life tale of
The First Samurai. I can't think of his name.
I think we talked about him on Sailor Noob.
We did. The first he was a navigator. European.
He crashed on the shores of Japan.
He's an Englishman.
An Englishman, yes.
Yeah. And I cannot recall his name for the life of me. It's a very English sounding name.
Flipperbottom. Shogun Flipperbottom.
Yeah, right.
And he becomes a retainer, essentially a samurai.
Yeah, right. He's basically the shogun very much respects his opinions and
You got it.
Yeah. Anyways, okay.
Timothée Chalamet will play young Willy Wonka in a new origin tale of the Chocolate Factory.
What? No.
Which what? There's a couple what's here.
Why are we doing this?
Yeah, that's one of the what's.
I don't care where the things I like come from. I don't
care where this chocolate comes from.
No. Willy Wonka is a ridiculous person who is incredibly eccentric and I don't necessarily totally 100% trust.
And he's not hot. Apologies to Gene Wilder.
Yeah, apologies to Gene Wilder, but he's not hot. No. So stop trying to make him hot.
Hot Willy Wonka.
And then the Johnny Depp version, just no. So who is directing this? Because
McGee, I don't know.
I hate this. This puts a really bad taste in my mouth. Get this chocolate out of my mouth. I don't care where it came from. Get your Chalamet away from me. I like Timothée Chalamet, but no.
It forever puts on hold the Call Me By Your Name sequel.
Oh, that's not happening.
No, that's not happening.
No. Armie Hammer called and
his mouth was full of co-ed. And he said, I can't do it. Sorry.
No.
Luca Guadagnino, the guy that directed Call Me By Your Name, was interviewed recently. And he said that he's not that interested in doing the sequel anymore. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. Maybe because one of the two stars is incredibly toxic.
Yeah. But he's working on a new movie called Bones and All, which will feature Chalamet. And also the guy who played his dad in the movie, who's really good and was in a Simple Man.
Oh, yeah. He was really good.
Yeah. Can't remember his name, but So he'll be working with some of those people. Just one of them, not going to be there.
Somebody wasn't invited. I wonder why.
No.
Okay. Sorry, Amy. I can't say your name.
His sister's name is Amy.
Yeah. Army, we're not calling you anymore. So.
What isn't it true that he is named after... Because his name sounds like Arm & Hammer.
Yeah.
But the company that owns Arm & Hammer, that's a conglomerate that owns a lot of brands, is like he's the heir to that fortune, isn't he? So he's literally named after...
No.
Don't quote me, but quote me, because who cares?
How can that be true? That is if that's true, that's incredibly awful and in bad taste.
But not worse, speaking of bad taste, nothing worse than what he's done.
No.
So... Just a man of extremes.
yeah.
Oh, gosh. Let's talk about something else instead.
Please.
Do you want to know what happened with the Powerpuff Girls pilot? Did you hear about this?
No.
Ear messes?
No.
You see the ear messes?
No, Leno. I did not hear about
this. So a script for the live-action Powerpuff Girls movie leaked online this week.
Come on, guys. Now, somebody who worked on the show leaked it. Don't freaking do that.
We don't know if it's real or not. But if it's not, then why did Warner Brothers, right? Why did the studio DMCA it if it's not real?
They DM, what does that mean?
Digital Millennium Copyright Act. We talk about this all the time. They got it taken down.
Oh, it's definitely real then.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
They wouldn't, if it wasn't real, they wouldn't bother doing that. That's right. What I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Why spend the time and the money doing that if it wasn't real?
And reactions to it were very negative. So negative.
Didn't like it.
And, CW hasn't admitted this is what the reason, but they have announced that they are retooling it. It will be debuting in the next year instead of in this fall.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like somebody who worked on it was like, this is awful. and decided to leak it online on purpose to get other people's reactions to it.
Well,
to
let me get this reaction. You can make up your own mind. So in this script, it is basically what a lot of people predicted. It will be, you know, the Powerpuff Girls are now disillusioned 20-somethings. Mm-hmm. And are dealing with, it's like a Rusty Venture type thing. They're dealing with their weird upbringing as girl superheroes.
Yeah.
The fame that they had and now lost and that sort of thing. And here's a scene.
Oh boy.
Bubbles says, Blossom's fine. I saw her on Insta that she has a boyfriend. I saw on her LinkedIn that she got promoted. And I saw on Facebook that she still talks to Grandpa despite their political differences. Buttercup says, coming back here is probably triggering for her.
Nobody talks like this. Who wrote this? A 50-year-old who's like, I'm hip. Yes. I've got it. Chucka 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 chucka. And does the Macarena they're Dr. Evil?
The answer to your question is yes.
No.
In one scene, Mojo Jojo says, what about my pet monkey? I think Mojo Jojo's running for mayor. He says, what about my pet monkey? That was meaningful in the last election. And Gina, his assistant, says, post Harambe. No one cares anymore.
What? I don't even get that joke.
Harambe.
What is Harambe?
She's a girl. She doesn't get Harambe. She can't get anything out for Harambe.
I really
Buttercup
don't get
says, it. I'm not wearing that dress. It's compulsory heterosexual.
No. No. Okay. Stop it. People don't talk like this. No, they didn't talk like this when they were little kids. It was funny and it was simple and that's why we liked it. And what are you doing to the Powerpuff Girls? I don't like this.
I'm Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls, the real Bubbles, unlike that Bobo knockoff Wonder Woman.
No. No. I'm nixing that right now. That's a no for me.
At one point, they are trying to get Buttercup her attention, and they threaten to leak her nudes.
Why do they have her nudes? And why would they threaten to leak? I've got so many questions.
So anyway, it's everything
it's weird.
You were afraid it was and more.
It's
so,
weird. Yeah. And I guess nobody...
And they're taking it back to the thing, so...
Good. I think that's a good thing. Make it better. Make it like how people actually talk, but, you know, they're superheroes.
You know, I would offer, what are they supposed to do? Like, this isn't... What do you do? How? What? Why would you... The entire appeal is... They're faced with the same problem that Dora the Explorer is, that all these things are. And you can go to this. They probably should have just gone to the Brady Bunch well, the whatever. Just take something. The only problem is that the Powerpuff Girls were never sort of ridiculous enough that you could kind of poke fun at them. Like, they're just, it's just a good show. It's just like, it's cool. It's, it's makes fun of itself. Is it MST3K that says this? Like, they don't do good movies because there's nothing to make fun of. You know, when I tell a joke when Bruce Wayne is talking about how he believes in Gotham or whatever. It's like you're just watching the movie.
No, right.
And I just don't know if you can make fun of the Powerpuff Girls. They've done it themselves already. They're made from sugar and spice and everything nice and Element X.
Right.
And so
the bad guys are
ridiculous. What are you supposed to do? You have set an impossible task. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they crashed it on purpose. Maybe they just like made it ridiculous. And then... they turned the script in. They went, they'll never. This is, I have, you know, references to to the Macarena in here. Bubble says, don't tase me, bro, at one point. They're never going to. And the executive reads it and goes, great, we can start on Monday. And the writer's like, I have to leak this.
That's entirely possible.
I need to sink this ship right now.
Yeah. This is a ship that needs to be sinked. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do to fix it. Honestly, I'm a little terrified. Well, that it's just going to be awful.
Yeah. Well, I am not terrified. Terrible segue. I am happy, let's say, that the Sandman cast list has been announced.
Yes.
Complete with preferred pronouns.
Yes. Which I think is a great... Why are you laughing?
Because it's really only because of desire, isn't it? You took
you took one character
who is who's ambigender, he's, you know, is ambiguous as far as gender goes, and then you just like made everybody else do their pronouns, which is like, I know that's been my life, that is my life right now, but like I know there's other characters who are ambiguously gendered in Sandman. Why not put that? Why not cast them and put them on this list too? So it doesn't look like there's, here are 12 people, 11 people with one friend who makes them all have to share their pronouns.
Well, let me ask you. Okay.
And I say that as somebody whose pronouns are on his Twitter bio.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
But we can still laugh about it. Come on.
But let me ask you this. Are those the pronouns for the character or the pronouns for the actors?
Yes. The answer to both of those questions is yes.
Yeah. I think it's yes.
Yes.
So
it's exactly what I said. Look, it is what it is, and I'm just making a joke.
I don't have a problem with it.
I'm just making a joke.
I know.
And you can say that it's in bad taste and not laugh at it, and I feel chagrined. But here are the people that are going to be in Sandman. Actually, should I read these names? Because a lot of these are not unknown actors. I'll give you this one. Kirby Howell-Baptiste is playing Death. And yes. You said that she was...
She was Chidi's girlfriend on The Good Place.
Yes, she was when he was in Australia.
Yes, yeah. And she apparently was also on Killing Eve. And I don't know what else she's been in. But so those are some of the big things that you may have seen her in.
Mason Alexander Park is playing Desire.
Yes. They apparently were Hedwig and the Angry Inch traveling production of that.
Yeah. Jolie Richardson, is playing Ethel Cripps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember who Ethel Cripps is.
See, this is a lot. It's been so long since I've read Sandman. I need to reread it.
Cripps. Wow. This is not. Ethel Cripps was the wife or the mistress of Roderick Burgess, who is the character who has not been cast on this list, but captured the Sandman in the 20s.
Oh.
So she's in like four panels of the comic. So they're going to take some of this stuff. And we talked about this off the air. We can talk about it now.
Yeah.
I think they're going to take some of this stuff and just go nuts with it.
I think so too.
You've already got, insofar as there is any through the storyline in Sandman, it's just spoilers for a 30-year-old comic book.
Right.
It's Sandman deciding that he wants to die.
Yeah, and then Sandman dreams.
And then moving on. Mm-hmm. And the whole rest of it is essentially an anthology piece.
Yeah.
So you could, I don't know how many seasons they're going to get, but say this is your first season. Just pick like the 10 best stories or however many episodes you have.
Right.
Pick the good ones. Yeah. Leave the cat one for, that's experimental. That's season two.
We'll just do an animated.
Yeah, but do Here Comes a Candle, with Calliope or whatever. Tell the story of him being captured or whatever.
I think you need to do that one.
Spread it around.
The Shakespeare one is a really good one.
That's the end.
Yeah, right? Sure, right.
I mean, it depends on if it's The Tempest or Midsummer Night's Dream. But
yeah,
moving on through the list here, David Thewlis is playing John Dee. John Dee is, if he's the real John Dee, he's the court magician for Queen Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's modern John Dee, he's Dr. Dream Man. Destiny guy. Mm-hmm. He's got the pouch. He's got this pouch of sand.
Okay, gotcha.
Keo Ria is Rose Walker, and Sandra James Young is Unity Kincaid. So they're related. Jenna Coleman is playing Johanna Constantine.
Yes, which you reminded me, she's a relative of
here's the deal.
John Constantine.
But here's the deal. A lot of these have been gender flipped.
Uh-huh, I know.
So she could play Johanna Constantine, the ancestor, and then play Johanna Constantine modern.
Yeah,
right. So can you imagine Jenna Coleman lighting up a silk cut and being like, "Hi, Squire."
That's what I'm trying to imagine. Her like smoking a chimney.
Matt Ryan is sitting in front of his TV with a bucket of chicken like, "Grr."
I know, right?
Struth.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry is playing Gilbert. Uh-huh. And Patton Oswalt is the voice of Matthew the Raven.
Yeah.
He, him.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
All right.
Okay. So this is promising.
I think so.
And it's one of those things where, I was just looking at this list. I'm not familiar with a lot of these actors.
Yeah.
But at the same time, good.
I think that's okay. I think when the some of the original casting came out for this, the actor who is playing the Sandman Dream, I think he's more well known for doing stage as well. You know, big stuff.
Have the name ready if you're going to jump in. Sorry.
That's okay. Oh. I can't remember his name right now either.
Brain damage. Professor X.
Professor X.
Yeah, he's Sandman on the podcast, right?
Oh.
Which they greenlit. It's all cross promotional, right? It's all horizontal marketing. But,
yeah.
But I feel like they greenlit before there was any movement on the show.
Yeah. Because
if there's going to be a show, then why do the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
James McAvoy.
Yeah, James McAvoy.
What's something that that Dream says?
I don't know, man. sorry. I freaking love Sandman, but I guess I definitely need to reread it.
I got to feed these pigeons. That's how James McAvoy would sound.
Sounds like John Lennon.
playing Morpheus.
Or Paul McCartney.
Sister, help me feed these pigeons. I stand in your hall.
Oh my God.
I'm holding your sigil.
Oh my goodness.
I can do this. Easy.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the gigantic... this should have been a lead story. Should we talk about the gigantic... deal with Amazon buying MGM for $8.5 billion.
I think we have to. I am a little terrified about this, honestly.
They are not. I think the CEO is not coming along, so he like
Bezos.
Yeah. No, not yeah, that Bezos. whoever the president of MGM is. I think he's already, you know, back
saying
in his bags,
sayonara.
But, yeah, and then the other story, of course, is Bezos stepping down as CEO of Amazon and retaining his president of the board position, as you do,
and probably pretty decent paycheck.
You don't have to come to the office anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
He's gonna be in space.
As you said, his true vision was to direct.
Don't you ruin the joke? You ruin the joke.
Sorry.
He goes through all this. He's the richest man on earth. He can do anything he wants. He's literally going to go to space.
Yeah.
But he both buys his own studio. Mm-hmm. He buys one of the studios, like one of the first Hollywood studios, an institution, a 100-year-old studio, buys it, then quits his job. And it's like, so he's going to direct?
right.
That's how you tell the joke.
Okay.
Nobody knows what this means. I know that Barbara Broccoli her broccoli is getting steamed.
Yeah.
Because I think that the Broccoli family is a little bit concerned. They spend every 10 years or so, they have to fight off somebody trying to take control of Bond. And the fact that Jeff Bezos owns James Bond, I'd be a little worried if I was them.
Well, and
they put out a statement to the effect of like, we are committed to having James Bond continue to excite people at the multiplex. And it's like, bitch, your movie's like 3 years late. It's not even in a multiplex.
No.
So,
well, I mean,
call your lawyer.
It's going straight to Amazon once it's available for streaming.
Yeah.
That there's no question about that. But I mean, every time I've seen this story written out, you know, one of the big things that MGM has is the Bond franchise, and so that it gets mentioned every time. So I understand why the Broccolis are concerned about this.
Hey, they've got the Great Space Coaster or whatever.
The Great Space Coaster.
What are the other ones that they've got?
Legally Blonde.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway.
Which
legally
I mean,
Bond.
You,
are you sure you're a real lawyer?
I mean, you reminded me is a franchise on its own, but it was it's like a Broadway show, and it's not quite the same clout as Bond.
Well,
so if that's
this
like
movie
your,
doesn't come out,
I know. But if that's like your number two, oof. So I'm concerned. I think Amazon. Their streaming shows, as of late, haven't necessarily done as well as they would like. They've got Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, they've got Fleabag, but Fleabag, we know there's not going to be any more seasons. I don't know what Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is doing right now, and a lot of them have just kind of flopped.
Yeah.
So I think maybe they're hoping to get into
James Bond
movies,
James Bond series.
There you go.
Coming soon.
Oof.
To a stream near you. You know Howard University? I hate when they call it this, but I guess it's like the historically black Howard University.
Sure.
They have recently voted to reestablish their College of Fine Arts and call it the Chadwick Boseman.
I think I'd College heard of about Fine Arts. That. That's pretty neat. Did he go there?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that makes it even cooler.
Yeah. I mean, they could have just
randomly.
But yeah, he's an alum.
That's really cool. That's probably, I don't know. I mean, I think only, that'd probably be one of the most meaningful things.
Yeah. He only played Jackie Robinson, James Brown, and Thurgood Marshall. And T'Challa, if we'll take fictional characters.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, you're going to get that guy's name on the building.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. That's really neat. That makes me happy. That makes me smile a lot. So yeah, good news.
It's good news. Here's some good news. Aaron Taylor Johnson is going to play Kraven the Hunter in a standalone pick for Sony.
Is that good news?
What do Kraven be without Spider-Man to hunt? Do you think
a crazy person?
Just a couple years ago in the before times, there's that heartwarming story about Tom Holland calling up Kevin Feige and crying. Or the CEO of Sony or whatever it was.
Right.
Like, please. Chaos Walking is all I have to fall back on.
Right.
Save my career.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay, well, Jimmy Kimmel says it's all right, so you're fine. What do you think he thinks now? Do you think he sits there and goes, am I going to have to show up in all these, in this Kraven movie, in this shitty Vulture movie?
I don't know.
A cameo in a Venom movie. And if you were Sony and you had the power to do this, you would have done it by now. So what's the real secret here? What's going on? I read an article that had an interview with the head of Sony Studios. And all he could say was like, the person asked him like, so is Tom Holland going to show up like in a Venom thing? Is he going to fight Venom? And all he would say is like, it'd be really cool, wouldn't it? How come you haven't done that already?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Have they even?
Do you think they can
broach the subject?
Do you think it's possible? Do you think that they are worried about a legal challenge from our mousy God Emperor? If they try that, do they have the right to do it?
Okay,
they should. They own the character.
Yeah,
but they entered into this deal with Marvel. What's in the deal that is keeping them from exploiting, Chaos Walking aside, one of the hottest young stars? Who's in one of the highest grossing films with one of the most, you know, well-known characters ever created by human beings? How come that, why do they keep going, we'll see?
I wonder if there's something in the deal that says that Disney gets a piece of it if he's in a movie.
Oh, so it goes both ways.
So they're like, well, we could put him in Venom and maybe we would get more money, Disney would get
that
money.
That would be true of everything, because the way that these deals go is it's a package, right? So any character that I think originated within the pages of probably any one of the Spider-Man books is technically theirs. So that's why they can do the, you know, the Kraven the Hunter movie, or they can have, you know, Liz Allen, you know, her dad be the Vulture or whatever. You can just bring all these characters in. People keep going, oh, when's the Sinister Six movie going to come? It's like, who are they going to fight?
I know.
Unless they fight Spider-Man, like, and Tom Holland has still not been in one of these things.
I know.
So I don't know. We got Morbius coming up. That's another one. Where Tom Holland's absence would be deafening. So I don't know how this deal works, but you're going to have to do something soon.
I think that Kraven is not interesting enough without Spider-Man.
Yeah, well.
I'm sorry.
Especially played by Kick-Ass. I guess that's the end of any rumor or idea of Quicksilver coming back to life, huh? I guess he's dead.
I don't know.
Which means that the whole thing, I mean, this deal wasn't done when WandaVision was shot, but the whole thing was just a huge troll then, bringing the other guys, Quicksilver back.
I really...
It was a big troll. Unless they go, just kidding, he was actually Quicksilver, and I don't know why his face is different. All right, check this out. What? There's a gay character in Cruella.
Okay.
It's the first out gay character in Disney history.
Oh, God, that's depressing. That is so depressing.
And is that even true? There's so many there's so many characters who they've already said, like, it's our first gay character. Look at these women kissing in the background of Rise of Skywalker. They're openly gay characters. Well, apparently, this character never even says or does any gay things. Prove you're gay. Do a gay thing.
Oh, my God.
Does any... there's no talking about their sexuality at all in Cruella. Uh-huh. But, like, they're just... You know, it's wiki gay.
You're writing that down.
Yeah. Well, that one has to fight with something else. But I thought
LeFou from the live action Beauty and the Beast was gay.
Did you watch the live action Beauty and the Beast?
I did.
How gay was he?
He, I think, danced with a guy or looked at a guy or something.
We're all gay then, aren't we?
I guess. I don't know.
Is it Israel? What's up, Disney? How come you can't figure this out?
I don't know.
Isn't like Pixar gonna have like a trans character in their next like movie?
I don't know.
What's holding you back, Disney? What's up with Spider-Man? What's up with Mark Ruffalo? What's up with gay Disney characters? I don't like it.
No, I'm not a fan.
Christopher McDonald is joining the Secret Invasion show for Disney Plus. You know who that is. Shooter McGavin. He eats pieces of shit for breakfast. Maybe the news has gone on too long.
Shooter McGavin. What?
Okay, never mind.
What?
That's for the audience. You get me, audience.
Okay.
Marvel has finally confirmed Oscar Isaac as playing Moon Knight.
They hadn't confirmed that already?
No. He appeared in an Instagram post on Marvel's Instagram channel or account, whatever you call things on Instagram.
We know!
And it was just his eyes and his wavy salt and pepper hair behind a collection of Moon Knight panels from the comics. So they took his folder from the Star Wars drawer, opened the lower drawer, into the Marvel drawer.
Yeah, right. I mean, we knew this.
You know that Danai Gurira is going to reprise her role of Okoye in Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
I actually saw something about that online. And on
the spinoff series, which, I don't know, is that going to happen?
The spinoff series?
Yeah.
The TV series?
Don't you think it's like dependent on Wakanda Forever making as much money as the first film?
A little bit, yeah. I think they're trying to make it its own thing anyways, though, regardless, because...
Well, I love how they tripled down once the star died. The star died. They said they're not going to recast, and then let's triple down with a sequel movie and a series.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of Dora Milaje action in the Falcon Winter Soldier series.
Sure.
And, I mean, obviously, I think that was shot... mostly before Chadwick passed.
Well, I think if you're going to dig into Bucky's backstory, that's all you've got, right? We've already, once you take Cap away, I know that's like, he has to think about that the whole show, but what else is in his backstory in the MCU?
He was in Wakanda for a while.
Unless you just invent some new stuff, which they kind of did with like, I killed this guy's kid or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough to move at this speed sometimes. We're moving... real fast.
I mean, I really just wish they would recast Black Panther. I just think that
me too.
Maybe they're psyching us out and they're gonna probably not, but
do you know Freddie Stroma?
No.
Freddie Stroma is from Bridgerton and he played a guy who with a blue uniform with silver tassels and he's got curly blonde hair. He looks like a guy that
Like the prince character we did a show with
back in the day.
Uh-huh.
Well, guess what?
What?
He's going to be in James Gunn's Peacemaker series on HBO Max. In case you forgot, the character of Peacemaker from the upcoming The Suicide Squad, played by Mandarin-speaking John Cena, is getting his own series on HBO Max. Gee, I wonder if he'll die in The Suicide Squad.
You think?
Well, what if you did? Here's a bold thing. Kill him. And then go back in time and have Peacemaker, which I feel like is a character that's kind of locked into a certain like time in comics, like the 60s and 70s. Mm. Then do a period series set in the 60s and 70s where he's, you know, and I don't know. He's got a infinity formula type thing. He probably does anyway. He doesn't age or, you know, just make John Cena look a little younger.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see that. Okay. I didn't realize that there was going to be a Peacemaker series, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. That's what news is for.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now the news's gravest duty, announcing all the people that died this week.
Stop.
Joe Lara, the star of 1996's Tarzan, The Epic Adventures, died on Saturday. His plane crashed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and his took his life and the life of his wife, an author. She's an author of... her name's Gwen Lara. She's a diet guru, basically, or was.
Okay.
Along with five others.
Oh, that's terrible.
It is. It's really weird. Oh, my goodness. And terrible. And B.J. Thomas has died at the age of 78. B.J. Thomas, probably best known for writing and recording Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
I laugh, not because they've passed, but because I always think of that scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Right.
They're on the bike. It's a ridiculous scene and an otherwise somewhat serious film.
I still don't. You think they just shot it and didn't tell anybody? Because how do you like ensure?
I don't know.
Sure. We're going to take the most famous, beautiful face in Hollywood and he's going to like ride a bike with his belly on
and
the
do
seat.
His own stunts.
Yeah. And then just crash. And,
without a helmet.
Yeah. Put out one of those blue eyes and that's the end of the film.
Yeah.
He seriously. Also wrote the original version of Hooked on a Feeling. Not the blue suede one, but
okay.
Yeah.
Those are great songs.
They are. And a great actor and great dude, Gavin McLeod, has passed away, star of The Love Boat and The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Oh, I know that name.
Died at the age of 90. Captain Stubing.
Okay. Wow. 90 is a pretty good run.
That's a good I feel one. Like yeah, I you have say to drag that out. You do every single time.
Sorry.
Every single time.
You can laugh at me. It's okay.
I'm laughing right now.
All right.
I'm doing that.
Okay. Good.
I think he was in McHale's Navy, too. I'm trying to think of what else he was in. Oh, that's right. He was in Kelly's Heroes.
Okay. These are all shows that I've heard of but haven't really watched. I never
well,
really
he was in the
watched.
Film, Kelly's Heroes. Oh, okay.
I never really watched The Love Boat.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Never really did.
You've seen The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, but not a ton. Like, I think by the time I saw Nick at Night, it wasn't really on there. So, I don't know. Not a whole lot.
Well, this has been great, hasn't
okay.
it?
Okay, all right.
What do we do with any of this?
I don't know. why don't you tell us some of your impressions of...
I don't have a Gavin McLeod impression.
Oh, okay. All right.
He is super Christian.
Oh,
if that affects
okay.
how you feel about him. He was an airman in the Air Force in Korea, or around the time of Korea.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say about him, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just a goofy guy.
Yeah.
Played goofy characters.
Sure. Yeah.
He was married to a woman for a long time. Got married in the 50s, divorced his first wife in 1972, then married his second wife in 74,
mm-hmm.
got divorced from her,
okay.
but got remarried to her in 85. They were divorced, I think, because of his alcoholism and his substance abuse problems. But he sort of straightened out and then they reconnected and got remarried.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a really cool, positive story.
It is.
Yeah. Maybe that's one reason why he's so religious is because getting back on the straight and narrow and not drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
But that's really cool that they were able to reconnect. That doesn't always happen. So good for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They probably hate gay people.
Raindrops are falling on my head. Just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed. Nothing seems to fit.
I want you to get up. I want you to get up out of your seats right now. I want you to go to your windows and open them up and tell them I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
She's doing it. The neighbors, it's okay. Yeah, it's prepare yourself for a perfectly outrageous motion picture. They did not know how to sell things in the 70s, did they?
That's not how you sell a movie.
If you can't put a girl in roller skates on this thing, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, no.
But when you think about it, you sit down and you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
How would you sell it? What are you even going to tell people? Exactly. Exactly. So we're talking about the film Network. It came out in 1976. Yes. And as we said before, it was directed by Sidney Lumet. He of 12 Angry Men, Dog Day Afternoon. You know, just one of the greatest directors ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written by Paddy Chayefsky. I think the only person who has won, or at least one of the few people who has won, three separate Academy Awards for his writing.
Really?
One for Marty in 1955, and he must have been a little baby when he wrote Marty. The Hospital in 71. And I appreciate it. I love your honesty, but I mean, like, what is it? It's Marty. It's Ernest Borgnine.
Okay, continue. Sorry, anyway. Sorry, I said anything.
No, I'm just saying, like, what? All you're doing is just going, I don't know what any of this is. All right, great. And of course, Network.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
It stars Faye Dunaway, William Holden, Peter Finch, Robert Duvall, Ned Beatty, and Beatrice Straight plays Mrs. Schumacher.
Mm-hmm.
Who played, I think she won a Tony for playing Elizabeth Proctor on Broadway, probably in the original run of The Crucible.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, you didn't know that. But now you do.
No.
It's a fun little bit of information, isn't it?
Yes.
What happens in Network? Oh, God help us. Gavin McLeod's God help us.
Should I just read like the plot from Wikipedia?
The thing is,
that's really long, Wikipedia, actually.
Yeah, Wikipedia is a summary. That is a synopsis. We just want a summary. Wait, what's right? Synopsis? Is a retelling. No, a synopsis is a short, just give us the log line.
So it is a TV network. I think it's called UBS.
Which sounds like a butt disease.
Kind of. but their ratings are struggling. They're not what they used to be. One of their news guys decides that he's been let go. And he's had this career for years, and the news is all he has. His wife has passed away, and he tells them on air that in a week's time he is going to commit suicide on the air. And they're like, "What? Pull it! You know, we don't want this. Pull it from the air. We don't, you know." But Faye Dunaway's character, you know, thinks that this guy, he's got something, and she thinks that there's something about sensationalism, and she thinks there's something there. And so she, you know, tries to talk to the guy who's in charge of the news and tries to get in with him. Which actor who plays that guy? Is it
Robert Duvall?
No, not Duvall.
William Holden?
William Holden, the guy she gets involved with.
He's, you want help, right?
Yeah.
Yes. William Holden is the head of the news division.
Yeah.
Reporting the news, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is, I think she didn't start as the head. I think she becomes the head. Well, people are reporting to her. Yeah, maybe she is the head. Remember, it's a number 4 network. So yeah. She's the head of programming that is like shows, like mm-hmm. fiction shows
yeah.
at the network. And yeah. So she sees potential in, and it's a little more complicated than that, but like in Howard Beale's, you know, crazy rants.
Yes.
And so she wants to develop a show where he does these full time.
Yeah.
And of course, William Holden's not happy about this because we report the news here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they get involved. It gets complicated. Robert Duvall is kind of has become in charge of the network. And it's like because it's owned by or controlled by this other company. So this other company, CCA or something like that, takes over the network. And so Robert Duvall is calling the shots, and he's like, "Hey, guess what, William Holden? You're out. Faye Dunaway, you're in. And this is how we're doing it." And so Howard Beale's news show, quote unquote, becomes this huge like spectacle.
Like a variety show.
Like a weird like variety show where a man who is possibly or most likely mentally unstable just rants at the camera about things.
So the Alex Jones show.
Sure, yes. And it's terrifying and scary and like ridiculous, and all these horrible things are happening. And
you forgot that Christensen, Diana Christensen, Faye Dunaway's character, wants to develop a show based on the real life footage of the Ecumenical Liberation Army robbing banks and kidnapping people.
Yeah.
Called the Mao Zedong Hour.
Yes.
Like, that's what you've got? Okay.
I know.
And so it's like, it sort of presages like reality TV as well in a way. Although, this is satire. You can't have a show about people, you know, holding up banks every week. The cops would be like, okay, so where are these people?
Right, right, right.
Right? You can't do that.
And each episode starts with some live footage of some event.
Yeah. The, of Patty Hearst, you know, shooting up a bank.
More or less.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
You're basically bankrolling them.
Yeah.
I assume they're getting paid for being on the show, right?
Well, and then they
So you are funding terrorism.
Yeah. They have that whole scene where they're looking at the script.
The scene where the terrorists are negotiating their end of the...
I freaking love it. But it's horrible. But anyways...
The Bionic Woman!
Yeah.
This is our lead-in!
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
But so basically, Howard is really hot for a while. They've got like the number one show. Things are going great. But then things are kind of turning sour and people aren't watching it as much.
We're in the third act now.
Yeah. And
of your story, your script.
So basically, the guy who's in charge of CCA had gotten to Howard Beale and was telling him, this is what you need to say. And then people didn't want to listen to what it was that Howard was saying anymore.
Well, Howard really started talking against the interests of the corporation.
Yes.
Because CCA is the corporate communications yada yada something, but they are a, you know, they're an equity firm basically.
Yeah.
Or holding company that owns the network.
Yes.
And they are looking to their debts are so much that they need to be bought out to stay solvent. So they're going to be bought out by a Saudi trust.
Yes, yes.
And Beale finds out about this. And what's funny is that once Beale goes nuts, we don't really check back in with him. We don't get his internal monologue.
No.
But for some reason, one night Beale goes out on his show and he speaks out against the merger or the acquisition of CCA by the Saudis. And he tells people to send telegrams to the White House.
Uh-huh.
And he causes this huge public panic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that deal dies.
Yeah.
But it must come back in some form because Robert Duvall doesn't lose his job.
Right.
And so once that happens, then Beale gets called in front of Ned Beatty's character.
Yes.
Who is sort of the head of this...
The CCA.
This merger, this controlling interest. And he basically, you know, puts the fear of God, kind of talks Beale's language about how the real religion is ITT and IBM and GE.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what we're talking about. Like, it's not that the Saudis are taking all this money. The Saudis are going to come back and invest this money. And this is the cycle. This is the church.
Right.
You know, this the church of money. This is how it works. This is the real fabric of the universe.
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so that kind of kills Howard's sort of... you know, his wayward sort of ways.
Yes. And so then after that, when he starts preaching what Ned Beatty wants him to preach, the ratings dip. And then they're like, well, we got to get rid of him. But Ned Beatty's character wants him on there because he's able to basically tell him to say whatever he wants. And so they're like, okay, he's not going to go along with that. And we have to go along with whatever he's doing. So then...
Right. Because we're, as a company... Howard's killing us, or he will soon be killing us, because if we can't take him off the air at 8 o'clock on Thursday night or whatever, we have to put something in there.
Right.
We have got to sell toothpaste.
Right.
That's what we do. We're this business.
Yes.
And we were used to be in the news business, but now we're in the entertainment business.
Right.
But when people start coming to the big top, we've got to find a new show.
Yes, exactly. To entertain. And which this is not entertaining
you, which
them.
Is why you don't turn the news into entertainment.
No, I
Although
know.
Although it's worked out pretty well for Fox so far.
Yeah, it has. So then they have the brilliant idea to kill him on air with two of the people from the group.
The ELA.
ELA. And they shoot him on air in this great camera footage because it was freaking planned. And then that's the end of the movie.
Which also, like, conspiracy to commit murder amongst the executives of a TV network. Yeah. Again, they'd all be in jail.
It's satire.
Although Les Moonves is still free somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's satire. But it's satire written in 1975 that reads like it was written in 2015 about the past. Uh-huh. It's like it was written about the origins of where we are right now.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No.
It fell through a time warp and was somehow filmed and broadcast in 1976.
I know.
It's uncanny. It's weird.
It's really weird. And
it comes from a place of complete hate and frustration. Patty Chayefsky hated TV. Mm-hmm. And all the speeches that are clear. Yeah. All of William Holden's speeches that are clearly like authorial voice, where he's talking about how like TV is, you know, he's trying to insult, you know, Diana, his jilted lover.
Yeah.
And he says that, you know, you are TV, you know, you're completely soulless and empty.
Yeah.
Those are all just right from the pen of Patty.
Oh, yeah.
I don't, maybe his Marty series didn't go through. I don't know what it is exactly. But yeah, he really felt that way about TV. Do you know who Christine Chubbuck is?
No.
I feel like we've talked about her before, but perhaps not.
Maybe we have.
Christine Chubbuck was a local television news reporter. I believe that she was, an anchor in Sarasota, Florida. And in 1974, on July 15th in 1974, she went on the air, I think in the morning. I think she was a morning anchor, and shot herself on camera.
Yeah, okay, we have talked about her before.
Yeah.
I'm terrible with names.
Supposedly, and there's like one or two movies, I think that came out fairly recently about her and her story.
Hmm.
And it's one of those things that, like, you think you'd remember, like, the first televised suicide.
Yeah.
You think that we would talk about that.
Why don't we talk about it more?
Because Patty Chayefsky, and he makes this point in Network, is right about one thing. TV is a ravenous beast that needs to constantly fill the boredom of its watchers, but also it's just a furnace for content. You just throw things in, and there will always be more to throw in. And so eventually, like a tectonic plate, you know, things like Christine Chubbuck or R. Bud Dwyer, the city commissioner who killed himself on live on camera, they're just rolled under.
Yeah.
But supposedly, this was an inspiration to Chayefsky. Now, this is debatable because a script like Network would take a long time to write, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're shooting this in late 75 or early 76, and Christine Chubbuck commits suicide in July of 74, there was already a script there.
Probably. Yeah. And maybe this event happened.
Maybe the Beale character didn't exist. Like... Maybe this was like the thing that the axis that he could add to it to make it all work.
Right.
But he did visit television newsrooms and executive offices to get an idea of how to sort of structure this thing. And I think a lot of those visits really influenced what went into his film, because he talks about how he met with a lot of television executives, and to a man, and they were all men, they were like, yeah, I don't really watch TV. And he's like, so you are creating this thing that everyone in the country is watching all the time and tells them what to think and feel. And they feel and think that way. And you're not even watching it. You don't even know what's on.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be infuriating. Yeah, right. I think that comes through. Well, I that's really interesting. And I think that maybe it was a very conscious choice of his then. It sounds like, to have the Faye Dunaway character in there, which I honestly really appreciate in a lot of ways, that there was a female character that was a big part of the story, even though she's not necessarily a likable character.
You really like the one female in the story is like the duplicitous.
Grasping kind of character. I'm just happy that women are represented.
Just happy to be here.
maybe that's horrible of me to say in a way, but like for 1976, for a show that's about TV and a TV executives and a boys club, it's just kind of nice to see.
I guess.
Even though she talks about herself, the way she talks about herself, that she has like like a male approach to everything, like that she's kind of more of a man than a woman. And like she, you know, she basically the way she approaches sex is how a man approaches sex,
right? Like, but she, yeah, but like it's, I think it's a bad message that to play in this, admittedly, this boys' club, mm-hmm. she has had to. It's, I don't know, man. I wasn't a female executive in the 70s. Maybe this is true, but like she's had to destroy her femininity at all completely.
And, I mean, she wears skirts,
and that's sure fine. And she's faked anyway. You know, she's a beautiful woman, but like, right. But the worst part is like, what's really telling is that at the end, when William Holden is trying to destroy her or at least disillusion her, he calls out all those things about her and says that they're her fault. And not like is not understanding about how she maybe had felt like she had to become that to survive in this, you know, dude's world.
Right.
He makes her guilty of all those things.
Yeah, I know.
So it's like, well, you can't have it both ways.
I agree with you. And I think I think part of it is that like he's just pissed. He's just lashing out at her.
But he takes a little joke that they had that like this love affair they're having, you know, would be a great, the movie gets a little, that meta hadn't been invented yet, I don't think.
Right.
Unless you're reading a Thomas Pynchon book. And so the movie gets a little meta in talking about how like, wow, you know, an old man and a woman that looks up to him who's younger are going to have this affair. You know, by the second act, this thing's going to be falling apart. It's like this little joke they have.
Yeah.
But then that becomes like his entire, every bullet he fires at her as their relationship is ending.
It's almost like, as if like he made it true.
Yeah, it's almost like he is following a script. Yeah.
Yeah, like he was like, oh, this is just always the way it was going to happen. And so, like, that's how
it happens. But it's really an old man whose piece of ass is not putting out anymore. And so he's going to go back to his wife.
Yeah, I know.
And he even calls out how in this story, he's the good guy because he finally, you know, offloaded the temptress and he's going to go back and repent to his wife.
Right.
And she'll just be cast out. And in the film, she is. She, as a human being, is completely bereft. Like, she is a victim in this, even though she was the person who dealt with terrorists. Like, she is being left to nothing. We don't see that she gets into psychiatric care or the show goes up. She ends up plotting a murder.
I know. I know.
So the script does kind of sell her out.
I mean,
although in 1976, you just go, yeah, that bitch got what she deserved.
Well, I mean, she's just, she proves to be soulless. Right.
She had a choice, but I'm also saying that the script, like the story, maneuvers her into a point where
I know
that's all she could really do.
I know, but it's like it's not just her. Like Robert Duvall is like, you know, they're all orchestrating this murder, and he's like keeping them on track in this meeting. He's like, okay, so what we're saying is, we're going to murder Howard on the air.
Yeah.
Okay. How do we do this? Yeah. Are we all agreeing on this? You know, and the guy who's like the president, who's kind of, you know, got silver hair.
You sound like Caroline Cornstar.
who is
I'm
that?
I'm going to murder you on the air. Okay, let's do this. All right. There aren't any microphones in here.
They have that line.
Yeah.
But the guy with like the silver hair, who's like the quote unquote president of UBS,
he's a
figurehead, and he's there, and he's the only one who is kind of slightly naysaying this idea. He's all like, we're talking about murdering a man,
right?
And everybody else just ignores him, and they're like, okay, how are we going to do this?
Yeah,
like
right.
Logistically,
we'll
get
the
wise,
terrorists to do it.
But we don't know what happens with her. Like maybe she's totally fine. Maybe none of them get.
The movie the end really focuses on Howard.
Yeah,
who has been the mascot throughout all this, but he's not. This is what happens to messiahs, right? Only he's not Jesus. Jesus is the center of Jesus' story. He's not the center of the story. The center of the story is Max, you know, seeing his beloved
William
industry
Holden
fall apart.
Yeah.
And Diana selling her soul to pull all this off.
Yes.
But it still ends with him, you know, the only man killed for having bad ratings or whatever. It's
right,
just like,
right.
Okay.
And it
this
just
isn't a perfect movie.
Ties it up in a little bow.
I don't think this is a perfect
movie. No, but I want to know what happens with Max and with Diana. I mean, Max, obviously, he goes back to his wife. I think his wife takes him back.
Sure.
That's what I think. But I think Diana is fine, maybe continues to be a little unhappy. But what happens with her career? Does she continue working at UBS?
She probably goes to jail.
Do you think she goes to jail?
Along with Robert Duvall. Well,
I
in
don't
this,
know.
It depends. If there's another half an hour of network, if there's a fourth act of network, if they go to jail, it's a morality tale. If they mm-hmm. if their ratings go higher
like
than
Seinfeld,
ever,
right?
And the Mousy Dung season 2 gets a movie deal, it's satire, right?
See, I think it's going to be the second one.
But the movie is, it definitely is satire, but it's not so pointed as that it's to be unbelievable.
Do you think like they would do something like Veep did, like
okay, now see,
like
the
it
first
has to...
the first 5 seasons of Veep are believable satire.
Right.
There's 7 seasons. The last 2 seasons of Veep are just balls
out. No, I agree
out,
with you.
Like unreality.
But do you think that like the end of Veep, it's going to be like, well, somebody has to take the fall for this crime. So do you think it'll be Diana more likely
oh, I don't,
than Robert
I can't,
Duvall?
You want to map Veep on every show that we watch?
No. No, I'm not saying that.
Yes, Diana will be buried in a twat of her own making. Yes.
Oh my God, stop it.
I read that Sidney Lumet and Patty Chayefsky worked together on this. Chayefsky often came to the set and was like, no, no, say it like this. And as a director, you think you'd be like...
Yeah, a little bit.
Get off my set.
Yeah,
but they were good friends. And Lumet also knew that this was a wordy film. It was a film where you had to get a lot of things across in dialogue.
Yes.
And he felt like Patty was, you know, naturally funny and had a better ear for dialogue than him. So he was totally cool with him sometimes bumping things up.
That's kind of cool.
As far as the visual style of the film went, they really made an effort in the beginning of the movie to make it very filmic. It starts off and Max and Howard are on the street.
Yeah.
And they're going from bar to bar. They're telling the funny story about suicide, which would become a lot more serious later on.
Yeah.
And it's all lit, you know, very cinematically. And by the time we get to the end and they're plotting Howard's murder, they're in this office. Everyone is sort of brightly lit. And there are these static shots. And he wanted to make it like a commercial, you know, like a cereal commercial or something like that. And so TV as a medium is even taking over the film by the end. It's making the film TV.
Okay.
Ending,
all
of
right.
course,
I
with,
can see
the,
that.
With the static, you know, shots of
yes.
the footage of Howard's death and then the cereal commercial and the news footage.
I don't know about you, but that was, it was, it was, the end of the film was really like just heart-wrenching for me and just, I was kind of on the edge of my seat because I knew this guy was going to get shot. And there's like, I think voiceover of them in the meeting talking about like, oh, we'll have to get an audience. And then we see the audience like going into the studio and like, it's just like this very like slow, but, deliberate, you know, filming and telling of the story and you're just seeing it unfold and you're like, and then you see this one kind of shady guy and you're like, okay, well that's the shooter. And then there's two shooters and that kind of surprised me, but it was
just the other
like,
guy Ahmed Khan?
It might have been.
I thought it was.
Yeah, it might have been.
I mean, I don't mean to, you know, he was, there's like one gigantic black guy in this movie. And
right.
So I just figured it was the same guy.
Yeah. I kind of wonder why he would be willing to do this, though, if I'm assuming they both got arrested.
Well, it's funny because the whole problem with the front person, their face, the Laureen character, who's the head of the communist chapter, but is like secretly or not so secretly the sort of the face of the Liberation Army.
Right.
She's mad about
Lauren Hobbs.
Hobbs,
right?
Yeah. She's mad about the fact that Howard is their lead-in. She doesn't want Howard as a lead-in because his show is declining in the ratings.
Right.
And so she's like, give me the bionic woman. Or like, she just doesn't want that. So they kind of get what they want because they literally killed their lead-in.
I know.
That's what happened to Danny Aiello.
No. What?
So anyway, do you think that Max bears any responsibility for what happens with Howard and the entire thing?
I think he does somewhat.
Because the first time that Howard goes on... And he talks about the bullshit or whatever.
He lets him do it.
Max has just been fired, and out of spite, he, you know, says,
he
no,
lets him
leave
ramble.
Him on.
Yeah. And I think if he had taken him off...
He helps create the myth.
He absolutely 100% does. And I think he could have done more, even after he was fired, to make sure that Howard stopped this.
And normally,
or to get him off
in the kind
air.
Of script that he always talks about Diana with... we would see more of his guilt for being part of that.
And dilemma.
But instead, he's off boning a 28-year-old.
I know. He's like, instead he's like, I don't want to turn into what you guys turned Howard into, but I'm not going to step up and make sure that he, even though I went on this long speech about how he needs, you know, he needs help. Like, he needs to see a therapist. He needs to be in, you know, he needs mental health. Help. He went on this huge rant about that, but then he just kind of lets it go because he's been fired, so he feels like he can't do anything. But you could totally do something still as a friend, right?
Yeah.
You could go to Howard, you could appeal to Howard.
But they barely interact for the rest of the film.
No, I know. And then his way of dealing with it, not dealing with it, is to try to continue this affair with Diana because they had a one-night tryst. And like he's obsessed with her. Like, why is he obsessed with her? Because he's chasing his youth, or he just thinks that she's like fascinating, or
yes, it's his youth.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
You're right. Yes,
but it's like
answer is yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's my money, and I want it now.
I know. That's what I thought about.
Any last thoughts about this film? That I mean, honestly, we could probably talk for a very very long time.
If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and see it. I think that it proves to be relevant still to today.
And if you get lost, they tell you where they are.
Yeah.
This is the middle of the second act.
I know.
Where the man is, okay, all right. Some of those parts are a little overwrought. But
yeah. And I think there's some really great performances in this as well.
By Lance Henriksen. This has to be one of his first movies.
Yeah.
In the scene where they go and negotiate the contracts at the compound,
yeah,
there's one extra executive in a blue suit, and it's Lance Henriksen in one of his first film roles.
Well, all right. There you go. There's a lot of...
Read, I hope that... I don't know if he's got a autobiography or not, or a biography, but Lance Henriksen had a real, real interesting upbringing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'll say that and just go rush to Wikipedia and read about it.
Oh, okay.
He had a real life.
Okay. All right.
And then he became an actor. And it was all wine and roses.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. But yeah, Dunaway is outstanding. I think Faye Dunaway is great, and William Holden
in a
is
part
great.
That does not have a ton of depth.
No,
I think that Diana is underwritten.
I do too.
But she does quite a lot with
that. She makes a meal out of it. I think.
And William Holden has, you know, he's been in a lot of movies, mm-hmm. A lot of great movies, but never, in my opinion, like a super strong actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he is really bringing it. And I think that a lot of these speeches are written for him, a guy who is not necessarily a presentational actor, but is more of an old-timey, you know, speechy actor. But he really just chews the crap out of a lot of his dialogue and does a great job.
That scene between
him and his wife is just, you know, she should have got another Oscar for that, Oscar period.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, she just really like gives it to him, as she should. Yeah, it's heartbreaking, and he's just like, I have nothing to say, and it's like, oh my god.
I was thinking about what defend yourself. I don't want to, and I can't.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the fact that Howard keeps fainting at the end of his
rants.
What
is up with that? Is he doing that on purpose?
Well, here's the deal. Who knows? Here's the deal. Is it right in time for commercial?
Yeah, maybe.
Because. Yeah, it's all a gag, right? It's all TV.
But I was like really honestly concerned, like the first time it happened, and like
the first time I watched the movie, I was concerned. This time I was
nobody runs over and checks on him or see if he's okay.
It's showbiz, baby, right?
I know, and then he does it later.
Fainted, not the Sybil. They have a Sybil on the show, but the actual Sybil, right? The whole thing when she prophesied, you know, that the oracle at Delphi, you know, they inhaled the fumes and then prophesied and were overcome. That's all part of the role, right?
God.
Even though he is definitely having a series of mini strokes. He is absolutely having a stroke.
I was going to say, is he consciously doing that or not? And then we have that one scene where he like supposedly wakes up in the middle of the night and it seems like he's talking to himself because as far as we know, there's nobody else there. And then he tells us on air what happened. Like, oh, I was visited by his, like, was it
you're
his
on television,
or
dummy.
Something?
Yeah.
Like, and I want to share, why me? Because you're on television, dummy. And like this huge thing. So does he actually think that he is a prophet and that he is delivering?
We don't know because there's that scene where, God, this is in the first act, where after this happens and it looks, and Max is like packing his desk and then somebody comes in. And then before you know it, like the whole crew is in there.
Right.
And you don't know if it's that, you know, Max is just a real, his staff likes him. I mean, he's outgoing, but like or if they are there to see him off because this is it for him.
Right.
But like Howard is there.
Yeah.
And then Duvall or the other guy comes in and says, well, they want to put Howard on every night.
Is
and Howard's
right?
like, hallelujah, that sounds great. What a, you know, it's a new, it's second act for me, a second chapter, a job. But is he like excited because he's, you know, a prophet or is he excited because he's a performer? And the film never lets you inside.
I know.
Up to the point that he is murdered on camera. And I think that's great.
I think that's good too.
That's how you make a movie.
Yeah.
Good job, everybody.
Yeah.
That's still alive.
We're still talking about it today. So there you go.
And hopefully we won't be canceled for bad ratings. Well, that's our show for this week. The business of show.
Mm-hmm.
There's no business like it.
There's no business,
business I know.
Like show business. That's,
we did it. That was like Tenet.
Yeah.
Well. You know, like I was coming one way, you were going the other way.
Yeah.
You watch some of those videos on YouTube where they a guy with a a bad graphics program is like shows you what happens in Tenet.
Yep.
And I'm fascinated by it. It works. For the reason that Tenet worked, although we all know Tenet didn't work, but that a lot of that's the pandemic. I think if the pandemic didn't happen, we'd all just, there'd be so many
guys on the internet talking about how you don't understand Tenet.
Mm-hmm.
This is the version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I watch these videos, I think, this isn't it, Chief. This is the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
This is going back through the turnstile.
Yeah, right.
This is not what cinema should be about. We should be talking about the protagonist's like choice to blah, blah, whatever happens in the film. You know, we should be talking about what we're talking about in Network. You know, what's at the heart of these characters?
Yeah.
Is this guy crazy or is he the biggest charlatan of all time?
Right.
You know, is Diana soulless or is she driven to that position because she's been told that this is how you succeed in this business? Do you know what I mean? That's what you talk about. Not like, and then no, see, because he threw the thing and then it went in the back seat of the car, but the box went and the car flipped. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Chris Nolan is taking us in the wrong direction. He's put us in the turnstile.
Yeah.
And we are going backward in time
uh-huh.
in terms of what we can expect out of cinema. I said it. I said it. And here's something else. No more dead cops!
Oh, my God.
Join us on social media where, I don't know, you can yell at us for all the horrible things we've done in these past 2 hours. But we're at Just Enough Trope on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find us on your listening platform of choice. Subscribe to the show if you haven't yet. Leave us a review because we want to hear how you think we're doing. And give us a rating. It's really the most important part. That's
Absolutely.
How the computer overlords in our world, our CCA, know that we're doing a good job. And hopefully we can move up in the ratings because that's what you want.
That is what you
so
want.
So just give us 5 buckets of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I love how, was that a KFC plant, you know? Or they're just like, these people are just, you know, having a bucket of chicken.
I don't know.
Is that paid promotion?
Maybe. Possibly paid promotion.
Did KFC know what it was getting into?
Probably not.
It's like, these would be terrorists eating our chicken. our delicious chicken.
Do we want that?
Even angry liberation armies love the great taste
of KFC.
Of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Because it was still Kentucky Fried Chicken back then.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Now it's just KFC.
Right.
And it means nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Because that's what we want.
So give us 5 stars instead. We'd appreciate that. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. And until then, we're signing off. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hanna.
Keep the geek fires burning.